Okay, let's go ahead and get started. Okay, attention please. All right, so what's going on in senior design these days? Building. For what? Why are you building? Preliminary design reviews. When are the preliminary design? No, even before the preliminary design. Prototype, right? When's the prototype? Next week. How many of you do not have an appointment with your course coordinator for your hardware next week? All right, somebody's lying. Because I don't have appointments with some of my teams, so you should have an appointment with your course coordinator by now, because those slots are filling up quickly. How many teams? We have a lot of people missing, first of all, which you can tell. So I should probably take a quiz, but. How many of you met with your advisors this last week? Yeah, that's okay, not great. I am getting some nasty grams from faculty saying, you really expect us to meet with our teams every week, which I appreciate. So that means I know some of you are actually forcing your advisors to meet, which is good. But you really do need to be meeting with your advisors weekly. Team 34 has a package. Is Team 34 here? Team 34 is not here? Team 34 has a package waiting for you somewhere in, I think I left it in Dr. Higgins' office, but. What else? Other issues. What's next week? Besides the hardware review. No. Engineers Week's getting close, though, isn't it? Career Fair. So, we do not have class next week, but I expect you to be at the Career Fair. I'll be taking attendance. Class is canceled. That says class canceled, not career fair canceled. It's what? You have to go. You have to go to the career fair.
Is there a company list on the website?
I don't know where it's posted on the university website, but this is the career fair run by the university.
University or engineering?
By the university. Yes. It's not focused on engineering, but I want you to go to the career fair. Getting experience, talking with companies, getting experience to see how companies advertise themselves, making connections, figuring out what jobs you don't want to have. That's really good ways to find these things out at career fairs. And believe me, many of you need a lot more experience talking to companies. So, I'm canceling class, but I expect you to be at that career fair.
Are you going to be there?
I am going to be there with an attendance sheet. Okay, what's coming up on March 1st? Preliminary design review. So what I want to talk about today is what my expectations are for the preliminary design review and the final design review. And the context for this lecture is partly based on the fact that we're seeing too many design documents that haven't been updated. And you're getting nailed for that on your weekly assignments. So, you've given two presentations on your projects already. And on March 1st, you'll have your third presentation. So what are we looking for on this third presentation? And what are we looking for this semester in both of your presentations? How do you score points with the judges this time? What? Begin review with what you did last semester?
And then go into what you did this semester, or in terms of hardware and the design aspects of it, and
what quiet, please. We got a lot of people in the room, so you need to stop talking because it just gets too noisy when everybody's talking amongst themselves. All right, you covered a lot of territory in that statement. Let's focus that a little bit more. How is the presentation on the March 1st, the third presentation, how is that different from the first and second presentations? And what are you going to tell us about your hardware?
Test results.
Okay, well, you may not... Test results would be great. What? Okay, so let's take it one step at a time. Hardware is a good point. What was one of the weaknesses of your final presentations last semester? If you look across the presentations, about half of them at least had a major deficiency in this regard.
Testing procedures?
Testing procedures is good. That was actually another weakness. I wouldn't consider that the major, but it was a big weakness. It was probably the second biggest weakness, actually. And this carried over to this semester when many of you were not ready to turn over a bill of materials on your first day of class. So what was the problem with the last presentation last semester? What was the goal of the last presentation last semester? The presentations that scored high all shared a very similar characteristic. All right, so this is a problem. You got to learn how to kind of game the system. This is, you know, engineering is all about figuring out what your customers or what your judges are looking for and scoring points on those things. So how did you really score big on the last presentation last semester? Well, what did we want to hear? What's the criterion for letting you into senior design too? Okay, and to give us that, what had to be true about your presentation last semester? There was a hand up over here. All right, maybe I'll ask this the other way. The teams that scored low at the end of last semester, what was one of the big comments you received? And you can sort of offer this up anonymously. Okay, why couldn't you produce a bill of materials on your first day of this semester? That's an easy one to answer. What? You didn't know what parts to order. Why? What? You didn't know exactly what you were doing, right? So if you look at the presentations that scored well last semester, they were basically the presentations that knew what they were doing. They could tell us specifically what they were going to build, how it was designed, the evidence of design, and what was going to happen this next semester. So at the beginning of this semester, when many of you struggled with getting the bill of materials to us, it was because you didn't really know exactly what you're doing. A small number of teams, even today, do not yet really know all the parts and all the, you know, all the details of their project. So what are we looking for on the first that's going to be different from last semester's presentation? So we had the mention of hardware, which is excellent. Okay, we'll get to that.
Clarity of design,
right? You need to get up there, and you better this time be able to tell us exactly what you're doing. Why? Because you're only about 5 weeks away from the final presentation, and there's not a whole lot of time left. So at this midterm presentation, if you cannot stand up there and say, you know, this is specifically what we're going to do, you're in trouble. You will get a very low score. Now, that's sort of a necessary but not sufficient condition, meaning you have to get past that hurdle, but that's not going to really allow you to survive the presentation. The next thing we need to know that's very important at this presentation is the test specifications. You need to have a very specific idea of how you're going to test your system for the design constraints. Because proving to us that you've met your design constraints is really the main way you go about proving the evidence of design has been accomplished. So what I want to talk today mostly about is this process of sort of proving to us you've met your design constraints and how you articulate that in a presentation. But also, there's another component of the presentation on the first that should be very strong this time around. And what is that? So we've got, you know, specific description of your system and the details, many of which were missing last semester. We've got test specifications. What's the third thing we're looking for? No? Well, close. Why are we having you do a hardware prototype next week?
See if the design actually works.
Okay, and how are you going to determine if your design actually works? And how are you going to determine if you meet the design constraints? By using your test specification. So, what has to happen in this midterm presentation is we need to see testing results. What do we need to see testing results of? We need to see testing results of your first prototype. Now, we don't just need to see the results. The key thing is we need to see some analysis of those results, because more than likely, your first prototype is not going to work. And we want to see some reflection on that issue. We want to see some of the engineering modifications you're going to make to the system based on that first prototype. And we want to see the plan for the second prototype and the third prototype. So those are three important things. And then what's the fourth thing any good engineering presentation should talk about when you're talking to your upper management and you're spending their money?
Cost.
Well, aside from cost. Related to cost.
Budget?
No. Time? What's the other word for that?
Schedule,
right? We want to see some schedule, a realistic schedule. We want to see where you stand on that schedule. Because we need to know what the status of the project is. Coupled with that, the last thing you need to talk about is a slide which you usually gloss over first semester, which is challenges and risks. Along with the schedule, what do we want to hear about?
Issues
and challenges and risks and risk mitigation. So at this point, if somebody, you should not be coming to us and saying, I need this piece of equipment and you don't have this piece of equipment in the lab. That's a discussion that should have occurred last semester. Similarly, you've got a schedule, you're rushing to be on time and to meet this April 12th deadline, but that's not going to be smooth sailing. There's going to be some risk involved in that. So we want to hear some detailed analysis and discussion of that. I think, for example, a number of you now are encountering problems with delayed shipments of parts. This always happens. And unfortunately, that's not a really good excuse for why you didn't finish your project, but I know a number of teams have experienced multi-week delays because vendors that claim that they had parts in stock, you place the order, and then they turn around and tell you the part's not shipped, and they're not sure when it's going to ship. So what are the five things we're looking for in the presentation on the first? First one was what? And I'm sure you've all written these down because I see everybody with folded arms and no paper. Of course, you've got the audio recording. So if you're listening to the audio recording now, please remember five things. Number one. Number one.
Hardware.
Specific idea of what you're building. And the design associated with that. And why you selected those components based on your design. Number two. Test specifications. Very clear ideas of how you're going to do this. How you're going to do these tests. And we'll talk in a minute about good ways to present these things. That's the main thing I wanted to hit on today. Number three.
Analysis. Testing
results, I think, was number three. Number six, don't be late for your presentation. We've had that happen. Number four? Schedule was number four. And then what was number five? Challenges and risks. How you're going to make sure you end up meeting your schedules. Okay, so what are ways? So in this presentation, so that's a lot to talk about in 15 minutes, actually. So this semester, you're going to find the presentations get harder because there's a lot to talk about, and it's hard to fit that in the amount of time that you have. So what's your general strategy going to be during this presentation? And this is a transformation I want to see in the presentations from last semester to this semester. What's the biggest difference in the visual nature of the presentations from last semester to this semester? Okay, but how is that going to manifest itself in the visual impact? We're talking now about the mechanics of this presentation. Right. What I should see much less of this time is text, and what I should see much more of this time are pictures, equations, and not so much equations, but pictures and graphs particularly. And I want to talk about graphs in a moment. But the way you really get these things across in a presentation is not to try to explain it through lots of text, but to actually show us pictures of things and talk about what's in those pictures. So let's take a look at a fairly successful presentation from last semester, second semester presentation. This project was mostly software simulation, so it's not necessarily the best for those of you building hardware, but this presentation it was really well done in terms of its content. So let me just first flip through the presentation so you see their slides, and then we can talk a little bit about the slides that they actually had. You see a nice picture there, right? So this is an example of sometimes the wrong presentation actually gets put up on the web. Yeah, that's why. So this was one of the better presentations, but this was not by far a perfect presentation. So let me now, before we get it, kind of get into the details of that, let me also show you their final presentation. Okay, so this was their final Senior Design 2 presentation. And a lot of the slides are the same. There's actually nothing wrong with that if they're relevant. That was a little bit, hey, you know, a little bit of marketing's not bad. We, what? Okay, so what was the big, you know, we went through them fast, but I just wanted you to get a look at the kind of visual style. What was the biggest difference you saw between their midterm and final presentation? Data. So what do you think they got hit on their midterm presentation? The lack of data. So this is a pretty, this group was a very good group at presenting, so they could kind of, you know, they knew how to kind of sort of BS their way through it, but they got hit on their third presentation because of lack of data, but clearly on the fourth presentation, they had much more data, much more evidence that they'd actually done something. Generally speaking, what's good about both of these presentations is that there's lots of pictures and lots of graphs. So it gives you a very good sense that they're doing real engineering work. And as they explained these things, I mean, you really saw that. They understood a fair amount about these things. Now, how did they arrive at that? Well, their first hardware design review was really rough because I was asking them some questions, and I know very little about this, but I know enough to talk about, to ask some questions. And I started asking them questions about this software simulation on their first hardware review, and they could not tell me how the computer tool was actually working. So when we pointed out some anomalies and said, what's that? They finally, honestly, we don't really know. We don't know enough about the computer tool yet to answer that. So they got hit pretty hard, and then they were able to address that. So the first design, this first hardware review is a lot of, you know, one of the values to you in that is it's your first chance to really see how you're going to be evaluated at the end of the semester. And it is going to expose a lot of the weaknesses of your project. So view it as a learning experience. Don't view it, you know, the goal is not so much to get 100%. That's probably not going to happen. But the goal is to really understand what the weaknesses in your project are when you go to make your final presentation. Now, what is the, if you had to talk about one slide, I sort of call this the killer slide. If you have to talk about one slide that really encapsulates what we're trying to accomplish in senior design, the one slide that I look for in every presentation, how would you describe that slide?
Block diagram.
No. By this time, I'm so bored seeing your block diagrams that no. That's good, actually. That's a good slide, but that's not the killer slide. Because you could have just, no. You won't get to the end if you don't show this slide. Analysis of design. How so? That's pretty general. All right, so let's flip through these slides again and refresh your memory. If you even attempt to read your abstract in this third presentation, you'll get the hook. Okay, what was the most important slide in the deck?
The graph.
Why?
Show that they actually did something.
Show engineering thinking.
How?
Simulation versus implementation results.
Simulation versus implementation results. So the killer slide, the slide that really drives all this home, is when you put up a slide that shows us your the prediction of performance based on your simulation. It then shows us the actual measured performance based on your first hardware prototype. By the final presentation, it will show us the second set of measurements based on your second hardware prototype. Now, what is really crucial in this course, and is not just putting this slide up. In explaining this slide, what am I looking for? So, when I stress this from year to year, students say, okay, we'll just throw up some plot and dazzle them with some great visualization of our data. That's still not quite what we're looking for. Again, that's necessary but not sufficient condition to survive this presentation. What are we looking for? Well, when they put this slide up, what is an obvious question to answer? The straight line, if I remember right, let's assume for the moment that the straight line is what their simulation predicted, and the dotted line is what they actually measured. What's the significance? What are some of the questions we should ask about a picture like this if you're a real engineer? Let's look at this is maybe a better example. Excellent. Why?
Why don't they
match? Right. The first question, when you show us your simulation results and then you show us your first prototype, they're going to be different. And oftentimes students will say, well, they're pretty close, so they're fine, everything's fine. No, the point is they will be different. The point is you will miss some of your design constraints on this first hardware prototype. The important thing is to explain to us why they're different and to do the engineering analysis to understand why they're different. I'll give you two examples of this. This team, which is one of our high-performing teams, made a really bad error. I think it was either their third or their second presentation. They put up a plot of wind speed data collected on the roof of McGonagall, wind speed data collected at the airport, and wind speed data collected at Carver High School. At the airport and Carver High School, they had lots of data. It had been collected over multiple years. At McGonagall, they had only like a few months of data, 3 months of data. And they were so convinced that these data sets were going to be different because they really didn't think about this one enough. They put this plot up and they show us that the airport and Carver matched pretty well and their data was offset. Same general shape, but the data was offset by a fixed amount. And they presented this to us, and said, there it is. Guess what it turned out the difference between those two data sets were?
Wrong units.
One, their data was measured, I think, in meters per second, and the other two data sets were miles per hour. That's a fatal, you know, that was a fatal, in a way it's a fatal error. I mean, we understand you're still learning how to be engineers, but I mean, that's a typical example that screams, you did not do enough data analysis. You're just trying to get these slides done and get your presentation done and show him some picture because he said I needed a picture. You know, that's not what it's about. It's understanding why and explaining why these are different. Now, how is that going to be reflected in your discussion of your second hardware prototype? Okay, so you do these two plots, and you see this white line here is maybe your simulation, and this blue line here is maybe your first prototype, and they're far away from each other. That's actually okay for a first prototype. That happens all the time. I have a student writing a piece of software. We're in my office last night, and he's telling me that the first version of the software takes 5 minutes to run through 400 files on a multi-gigahertz processor. And I told him that's unacceptable. But it's all right, because that's your first version of the program. Now the point is, he's got to analyze that program and figure out how to make it run in 5 seconds versus 5 minutes. So, you know, he started looking at me with a somewhat blank stare, and I said, well, why don't we just go in and time each aspect of the program, put it all into a spreadsheet, and figure out where the slowest part of the program is. When he did that, it became obvious. There's one piece that's taking 90% of the time. So that's what he's going to engineer in the second version of the program. Now, many of you at this stage of your careers would probably just start hacking that code without even timing it, thinking you knew where the problem was. And you would probably be spending time fixing the wrong parts of the program, do that and find out, well, that really didn't affect overall execution time because that wasn't your biggest bottleneck. So, again, it's not just analysis here. You know, some of you are going to try to say things like, oh, it's just an instrumentation problem, or, oh, you know, I picked a bad component. What we need you to do is to look at these differences and reflect upon how you're going to redesign your system to bring those two curves closer. Because that's what engineering is all about. That's how engineering occurs in the real world. You optimize and improve until your system meets its design constraints. Now, look at the flip side of that. Suppose you build your system and your performance is much, much better. The performance of your first hardware prototype is much, much better than your design constraints. Now, if that actually happened in senior design, I think two things would happen. First, there'd be cardiac arrests in the lab because I don't think students ever have seen that happen. And secondly, you'd probably go home and start partying. But unfortunately, that probably means you're not a real engineer, because what's a real engineer going to do in that case? So what happens if your first prototype does significantly better than your design constraints? Well, I know you're going to, of course, redo the measurements just to make sure. But let's assume this is real. Everybody agrees these are real measurements. So who in this room wants to be a millionaire someday? Everyone, right? I refuse to answer that. As you actually, $1 million is not... is not what you think it is. So, but in your you know, who wants to be a billionaire? Okay, so, and I actually had I had a company come in, I'll tell the story in a second, address this very issue. And the students really learned a lot from that experience. What's wrong if your first prototype does significantly better than your design constraints, what is the question your management is going to ask? What is a primary question, especially if you're doing like a consumer product? No, it's not so awesome. What are the components of our projects? Performance, price, schedule, and risk, right? So what happens if your design comes in much better than your design constraints? What's your next engineering task? Well, expand on that. You're going to start looking for ways to reduce the cost of the design so that you just meet your design constraints. That's why they're design constraints. All you need to do is just meet them. You don't need to significantly exceed them. If you significantly exceed them, that means there's probably a good chance that you can cut out a significant amount of cost from that product. This is another example of this. You know, I know some of you are saying, oh, here's this ECE guy again talking about gadgets. If you're on a research if you're on a project, like you're doing a consulting job, and you're given a certain amount of money, typically when you sign a consulting contract, you're capped at a certain number of hours and a certain budget. And, you know, you're paid hourly, essentially. So let's say they give you $100,000 cap for the project because that's what you estimated the project to cost. And instead, you come in, you've done all your work, and you hand them a bill of $50,000. What's wrong with that? Well, even more so than estimated wrong.
You're too efficient for your own good.
What?
You're too efficient for your own good.
Why? But, I mean, what's wrong with this? You're walking away from $50,000.
Yeah, don't be so honest, right?
Well, it's not a question of honesty. It's a question of, surely, if your estimate was realistic, which it should be, there's additional analysis you can do. You can find some way to spend that money. You never send money back from a project. I actually had a faculty member do this yesterday. He said, you know, I've got some money left over, and you know, we could just send it back to the sponsor. And I said, you've got to be kidding. Exactly. I said, buy something, take a trip, do something. You know, send a student to a conference. He was just kidding. But, I mean, you know, everybody knows in the research world, when you get a research project, you burn every penny you can get. And then some if you can. If you're trying to build your reputation at your company, or you know, there's some times when you may want to do that,
yeah.
And I've actually done that myself. So I mean, I'm an abuser of this, but you want to make sure if you're doing good work, they know they're getting value for their work, and if the report that you generate in that kind of a scenario reflects the value, they'll be happy. So it just sort of varies. One of the projects I finished last year, I didn't have a lot of time to work on it. I actually worked a small number of hours on the project, significantly undercharged them, but they were actually really happy with the results because it saved the project. And for me, that was the only project I've ever done where I kind of worked very, very little and actually got maximum reward for that. But I walked away from a lot of money because I just couldn't build the hours. I just didn't have the time. So I was very smart about it. Instead of trying to write a lot of code myself, I picked stuff off. It was what's called a phase one SBIR, which is Small Business Initiative, and all you have to do is demonstration. You don't actually have to develop the technology. So I patched something together in MATLAB and Audacity and a few things and got it all working and gave them a demo tape that was great. But I didn't have to actually implement all the algorithms in great detail. That saved me a lot of effort, time. But I didn't have that time, so that's what I had to do. And it was a company I'm trying to build a relationship with, so I was trying to be honest with them. But, you know, in general, getting to the point, we had a company, my previous job was in Mississippi State University. We had a company in the state that makes ballasts for fluorescent fixtures. And this whole discussion actually comes from a presentation they gave. And Ballasts are these little transformer-like, these big black boxes you'll see in old-style fluorescent lights. And they said, you know, we sell about 100 million of these a year. They cost about $3 a piece. So it's like a $300 million business. And they said a typical job for a first engineer at their company who's fresh out of school, has a lot of new knowledge, a lot of different ways to look at things, is we ask them to take this ballast and try to reduce the cost of manufacturing this by 1 penny. Because 1 penny for them translated to like $10 million or some amazing amount of cost savings. And in fact, ballasts of this style are very heavily optimized because they're such a cost-sensitive type product. So they were talking about this, and they actually showed a curve of the FCC requirements for electromagnetic radiation emitted by these ballasts. And they showed us the spec, and he actually put up a plot of one of their like prototypes or something, which greatly exceeded the FCC spec. And just like many of you did in this room, you know, he said, so, you know, what do you think about this? And the student said, yeah, that's great engineering. And he said, no, I look at that and I see waste. So when they looked at that, they told the engineer doing that, go back and reduce that gap so that you just meet those constraints, but reduce the cost of the product. Now, that's if your design constraints are not right, that can be dangerous because you may actually, you know, make the product unusable or something. But that's why design constraints are so important. And that's why everybody has their hands all over your design constraints before you ever build something. So for this midterm presentation, we expect to see some kind of simulation or projected performance that will come from your engineering analysis and then some actual data from your first prototype. So naturally, if you're going to show us actual data from your first prototype, you're going to have to talk a little bit about how you collected that data, which means you're going to have to explain your test setup for that data, your test specification, and those kinds of things. And that's what you generally see missing from a lot of the midterm presentations. So as you look at the other projects, you're not going to see as much of this as you should, because the teams are always behind at this point. And that's why we keep kind of pushing up the hardware deadlines, because it seems like you just got to get in there and start building stuff to get at this kind of data. So are there any questions on that? I know students always say we don't know what you expect in these presentations, and we try to be very, you know, very clear about that. Now, the details of this, of course, will vary a little bit based on your project. So if you have a question about how to present this kind of information specifically for your project, talk to your course coordinator. Ask them, Piconi said, I need a slide like this. What do you think that needs to be for our project? And either they'll tell you Piconi's crazy, or they'll actually tell you what you need to show for that. If they say Piconi's crazy, tell them to come talk to me. And no, I think most of them will tell you, they understand what we're looking for. Any questions on that? All right, so that's a big thing for this second presentation. Some of you will attempt to dazzle us with your command of the equation editor. This slide had an interesting evolution to it. The first time they put up this slide, they had about 5 or 6 equations on it. It actually did sort of part of a derivation. And it was very busy, and it was very difficult to understand what the point of the slide was. But what's good about a slide like this, if you get it right, is it's nice to show us since we are sort of engineers after all, and there is a little bit of science in all this, it is nice to show us one or two equations that really define the essence of your project. Especially if they directly relate to the way you're designing your system. But, you know, don't just show us equations. Show us some explanation of the equation. Show us maybe some pictures that relate to the equation. Give it some meaning. Because the equation in itself, people are not even going to look at it. It's just eye candy, more or less. But we do expect, I mean, in their final versions of this slide, they were pretty good at explaining essentially how you go about this project was about predicting wind speeds around building surfaces on Broad Street, and they did actually explain a little bit about how the simulation tool actually sets up and solves the equations to produce these results. And it turned out, in doing that, they exposed a number of issues. For example, the limitations of the simulation, that was a big issue in this project. How accurate are these simulations? Are they accurate on a micro scale? Are they accurate on a macro scale? I think what's better for a talk of this nature, so this project deals with wind speeds, talking about wind speeds in this vicinity of McGonagall Building. So what's good about this slide relative to that topic? All the civils raised their hands. They should know this stuff. So when you look at this slide, there are more civils than that. When you look at this slide, and you know the talk is about wind speeds, why does this slide create some warm and fuzzies? If that's your area. See, if I was doing this slide as an electrical engineer, I probably just would have put up some XY plot of wind speeds. And civil engineers would look at that and say, huh, why? What visualization tool are they using here? Look at the title of the slide. What? Wind roses, right? And why is that important if you're talking about this in a civil engineering context? More general than that, just high level. If you're sitting in a bunch amongst the civil engineers.
To be honest with you,
You never even saw wind roses? All right, so this isn't going anywhere then. Okay, well, the point here is this is a visualization that is a standard visualization in this community. So when you put this up, the civil engineers who know about this kind of stuff say, ah, wind roses. They understand that visualization. They know how to interpret that visualization. It's a standard visualization for this type of engineering. So when you are trying to prepare data analysis, don't make this stuff up. Don't produce some multicolored glob that nobody's ever seen before. Make sure you understand how the information is typically presented within your area. Now, there's a couple points in that students often make. You see two plots here. You actually see four plots here. There's a big, and I know maybe the people in the back can't see this, but there's a serious mistake between these two plots in my view. People in the front row should be able to see this. Why are they showing me these plots? They want me to visually compare data, correct? The scales are different. I see this all the time. Students will put up four plots. They'll use some auto-scaling feature in their plotting tool like Excel or MATLAB because they don't think twice about this. And the four plots will all have different scales. And they'll say, from these four plots, you can see C is best. But you can't really tell that because the plots have been auto-scaled. So when you're comparing numeric data, rule number one, if you're trying to have somebody visually compare A to B, make sure the scales of the plots are the same. It's a small point, but you'd be amazed at how often people mess this up. Now, the second thing about plots that mistake I see a lot of in senior design is the scales. What are some of the common scales you've encountered in your engineering education? Linear? Logarithmic?
Exponential?
Logarithmic and exponential are kind of the same thing. What? I'm sorry? Decibels are logarithmic. Scale? Okay, so, and maybe there's some variants of these, but if you're trying to demonstrate a relationship where y is a function of x, and y you expect to be a linear function of x, like force is equal to mass times acceleration, as you did way back in physics 1 or even in high school, and you want to demonstrate to me that you went into the lab and experimentally verified that force is equal to mass times acceleration, what kind of a scale are you going to use for that plot? You're going to use... You've only got two choices, come on. Linear, why? Which is... It's a linear relationship. Why do you do a linear scale on your plot? It's a linear relationship. What am I expecting to see if it's a linear relationship? A line. So you use linear scale so that visually this looks like a line, so that visually I can check, oh yes, that is a linear relationship. Now, what if the relationship is y is equal to some constant times x squared? The relationship is a parabola, a second order power series, right? Parabolic function. What kind of a scale are you going to use? You're going to use a linear scale for that? Why? Because I wouldn't be talking about it for two times in a row, right? Why not?
The shape is not linear.
So? So? So what kind of a scale are you going to plot it on? Second order. What? Why? Well, another mistake we often see in plots is that if you take a relationship like y is equal to x squared, there's a large dynamic range, right? Because being a quadratic function, if you're trying to compare values close to zero with values far away from zero, these are going to be very far apart. On a plot where you have y equals x squared, values close to zero are going to be very much compressed. And it's going to be very hard to see differences between two designs if you're focused on that really low-end range of the scale. Now, one of the reasons we use logarithmic plots is because it allows you to look across orders of magnitude on designs. It's not an accident that logarithms are used in a lot of different engineering disciplines because you can look at the designs at many different scales when you do that. So the second thing about plotting is to make sure that you're using scales that are representative of the way this information is displayed in your area, in your technical area. For example, if you're doing, I have a group doing some audio stuff, and their plots are going to show me log scales for amplitude because that's the way we look at audio plots. That's common in the industry to see logarithm as a function of frequency. Okay, so that's point number two. Now, the last point I want to make, and I don't know if I have that in this presentation, and I hope you will take notes on this. Yeah, I have a good example of this here. When you want to present a table, many of you will go into Excel, you'll enter your data in Excel, and then you'll cut and paste that table into your document. And when I look at that table, because you haven't paid attention to it, I will see numbers like 1, 1.0, 2, 1.67, 3, 1.71563824. Now, what's wrong with that table? Students often claim it's formatting. They say, oh, I just forgot to format it. There's something much more seriously wrong with that than formatting. What?
Six figs.
Who taught you that? What class? Good. Very good. So tell me about that.
Well, the other product got screwed up because they didn't pay attention to it. The data isn't consistent.
Well, you're going to be sitting there trying to tell me that one design is better than another because 1.1 is better than 1.0. It misrepresents the accuracy of your design. What? Yeah, so whenever you show us numeric data in a table or just in general, make sure you're only showing as many digits as are significant to that measurement. You learned this way back in physics and chemistry and you forgot about this. But this is a big issue because you're going to be trying to split hairs on designs and you need to make sure that those differences are truly significantly different. You have enough significant digits to address that. Now, how do you know how many significant digits you have? Well, this gets into what kind of instrumentation you're using. And that's why we want to see detailed descriptions of your experiments. Because if you show us, for example, what equipment you're using, we probably can figure out how many significant digits you're going to get on that test. If you're using a $20 oscilloscope, you know, you're not going to get 6 digits of precision. If you're trying to argue for the difference between 100 dB and 101 dB, you better have a $50,000 oscilloscope. Because you're not going to be able to split those kinds of hairs with cheap equipment. Now, you know, we see this every year, that this problem with, you know, lack of attention to significant digits in presenting your data. So please pay special attention to that because it's really a basic engineering thing. So that means all the numbers in the table, for those of you who don't quite understand what I'm talking about, all the numbers in the table should have the same number of decimal places. And the number of decimal places should not just be chosen because 2 is the default in Excel. It should be chosen based on what your experiment actually delivers. Okay, any other questions on our expectations for the presentation on the 1st? You always say that, but then, you know, after the fact, I get all this hate mail about, you know, you didn't tell us what you were looking for. All right, good luck. I'll see you in 2 weeks. Except if I see you for the hardware reviews. Get those hardware reviews scheduled.